All right, we are studying in Judges, and we're looking at Gideon, and we're continuing the story of Gideon. And in chapter 7, it refers to Gideon as Jerubbaal, which was another name, which let Baal contend is the name. And so they rose up, and I don't want to go over all of this infinitely, so I'm not going to go over it in detail. We've already done that a good bit. So what God said was, as he told Gideon to gather the people together, Gideon had done that, and he said, the people that are with you, and I think this is remarkable because I said it, and I read it, and yes, it's true. Look at what God said in verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, the people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead. And so they did. 22,000 went back. And so there remained 10,000. So then the Lord said, well, Gideon, there are still too many. Isn't that something? The Lord said to Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whomever I say unto you, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So he brought the people down to the water. And, you know, I was talking to Laura about the map and everything. She said, you all can't see the detail anyhow. So all I'm going to do is show you the area. So I'm going to try to do that. So the area was up here. In this general area right up here. And so that was in the area of Zebulun and Issachar and Manasseh down here in the lower part. So the Mount Gilead kind of comes off down into this plain. That's a big plain there. So it comes down into that plain there. And I've told you before that when it came down, it's very steep, and the spring of Harod, or Herod, as it looks like it is, it's at the base. The spring is at the base. So that's where he had them drink. And, of course, this was the Lord's will. So they drank, and some put their hand down and put it up to their mouth, and others put their hands down and actually lowered their heads and drank water out of it. So that was the distinction that was made. So he wound up with an army of 300, an army of 300 men. Now, it would be hard for any group of men to say, well, we're so able, we're so daring, that we 300 are going to beat this entire great big army. So they wouldn't say that. And I think that God accomplished his purpose. So he said, all right, you need to get ready. And so he told Gideon, now I want you to go down in the valley. And the hill of Moreh was over there in that general area. Hill of Moreh. So, again, it was just up here in that general area, right up in there. So, the Hill of Moreh, and it was just a kind of a long hill. I've often thought of it, if you took a shovel, a great big shovel, and you threw the dirt out there, and you threw it out there so it made a kind of almost like a grave. Except it's a very big grave. That's the hill of Moreh. So the Philistines, the Midianites were there. And the children of Israel, the Gideon's forces, were lower than that. So up there at Mount Gilboa. So that was up there in the north. So that's where they were. And that's what they were doing. And so, all right, so Gideon, I want you to go down. I'm going to reassure you, Gideon, I want you to go down into the camp. So he carried Purah, P-U-R-A-H. He carried Purah with him. And they went down to the camp. And so as they went down, they were listening. And as they crept from tent to tent and so on, they came to this conversation that a man was having. And he was telling his fellow, he said, I had a dream. And in this dream, I saw a barley cake, a loaf of barley bread. And it came and it rolled down and it hit this tent and it just crashed this tent. The tent just dropped and fell flat and everything like that. His fellow, the one he was talking to, said, oh, I know what that is. That is Gideon and his forces. And they're going to beat us. So that was a remarkable thing for him to say, because he was one of this big crowd of this great big army. And so he said, the Lord, Gideon is going to beat us. So Gideon was very reassured after that. So he went back and he went back and said, all right, men, let's go. Because now he was assured that he was going to be able to beat. So they equipped the men. They gave each man a trumpet. Now 300 men, each man a trumpet, and each man a pitcher, an empty pitcher. And this is not a pitcher, but a picture. And it was an empty pitcher. And the idea was that as you took your torch, you had your torch inside this pitcher. When you broke the pitcher, suddenly, then what could you see? The light, the torches. So that's what he had them do. So there were 300 men, divided his forces up in three parts. There was 300 men were scattered around. And apparently, we don't know exactly, like, were they all scattered all around like that? We don't know. The best idea I get is that there were three parties of 100 men stationed around the camp. But they may have spread out more than that. We really don't know about that. But they spread out. And it was the beginning of the middle watch. So in the night there, you get used to being on guard and everything gets kind of old hat. And then you take over. Now, this is your shift. So you go on shift, and so you're thinking about, oh, what was that? What was that? And so you're kind of on alert. And so they were on alert, and suddenly Gideon said, all right, you everybody do like I do. And so they broke their pitchers, and suddenly all these lights were all over the place. And the Midianites just lost it. I mean, they lost it. And one of the things that, you know, we know that these, at least we figure that these armies were not uniformed and all that stuff. Well, that's pretty well what we read. So as they, pitchers broke and the light suddenly appeared. What did we do? And so they just killed one another. They didn't know who was who, and so they killed one another. So I think that is a remarkable thing, and that's exactly what happened. That would be pretty well what you would expect when you have a crowd of soldiers that's not differentiated. So they gather together in verse 23, this is chapter 7 and verse 23. He gathered, the men of Israel were gathered together out of Naphtali, out of Asher, and out of all Manasseh, and pursued after Midian. Now, of course, the Midianites had crossed the Jordan. So they had come over this way, and these arrows are showing the crossing of the Jordan by the Midianites, and there are various crossings there. So they crossed over, and remember, they had already gone down all the way down to Gaza. All the way down to Gaza. They were raiding those the people that lived in that area. They had gone all the way down there. And so they were, you know where they were interested in going? Back home as fast as possible. And so they were going to have to cross the Jordan to do that. So one of the tribes is Ephraim here. So Gideon said, he called on the men of Ephraim. He said, you all come down and seize the fords of the Jordan and stop any Midianite from going across. And guess what they would do to stop them? K-I-L-L them. That's exactly what they would do. So that's what happened. So he sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against Midian and take them and take before them the waters as far as Beth-berah, even Jordan. So all the men of Ephraim were gathered together and took the waters as far as Beth-berah, even the Jordan. And they took, in verse 25, Mike, read verse 25. Now, this rock, they slew Oreb at what? Guess what the rock of Oreb was named after? Oreb, who was killed there. And then, what about the wine press? Guess what it was named after? So that's where he was killed. And so, I've often thought, one of the sure ways of showing identity is to bring the head. You don't have to have fingerprints. They brought the heads. And that made sure. All right. No, now the Ephraimites were not happy. And during their history, there are a lot of times they were not happy. They will get unhappy during the days of Jephthah. And Jephthah is going to handle it pretty well differently from the way Gideon did it. So they got Gideon. What do you mean going to war against these people and not even calling us? Why did you not call us? So the word is they chided. They got all over him. We don't like what you did and everything like that. But Gideon placated them. He soothed them. And he said, now the gleanings, your gleanings are better than our vintage. Now, the gleanings would be when you would go in and you kind of pick up what's left. So, what's left? Well, what was left? Well, the people of Ephraim had taken the Jordan, and they were catching all the people. And the Oreb and Zeeb, they were doing that. And so far, Gideon was not able to do anything yet. He's going to, big time, but he's not yet. So that's the way he placated them, kind of soothed their feelings and everything like that. So he said, in verse 2, what have I now done in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage? You see the contrast there? The gleaning is what's left. And the vintage is what the reaping, the main reaping. So that's what he said. So their anger was abated toward him when he said that. Now Gideon, now do you realize from what I've told you, where is Gideon now headed? Across the Jordan. So he's going to pursue the Midianites and all that, and Amalekites are involved, and so on. So when he passed over, and notice in verse 4 how many passed over with him. See, this is 300. This is the 300. And they were passing over with him, and they were pursuing him, or pursuing the men. And so he came to Succoth. And Succoth is, of course, on the other side, over in this area. There's Succoth and Penuel. So he comes to Succoth, and he goes to the men of Succoth, and he says, "The men that are with me are faint. We need some food. We need you to help us out, have some food to eat so that they will not be faint." And, oh, I just love this. I don't love it, really. I'm being sarcastic. The men of Succoth said, "Well, do you have the princes? Do you have them?" "No, not yet." "Well, when you have them, let us know, and we'll help." Oh, in my life, I've experienced that a lot. Go into an area, go house to house, just visiting in the area, and you tell the people what you're doing, and there are many of them who are Christians, supposed to be. And so you say, "We're trying to establish this work. Will you help us?" "Well, not yet. We'll wait and see if you get things going." Do you get the point? Man alive, you're trying to get things going, and you ask them, and they'll say, "Well, if you get things going, we'll help." "Well, thanks a lot. I really don't care much for help like that." Well, that's what the men of Succoth said. "Let us know when you have them, then we'll help." "Well, it'd be too late." So then they went to Penuel, which was just a little bit further. And they asked the men of Penuel. And the men of Penuel said basically the same thing. "Wait until you get the Zebahs and Almunna, and then we will help." And they wouldn't. They wouldn't. So they had to go on. So Gideon had to go on with the men that he had. And they were chasing. They were chasing Zebah and Zalmunna in verse 10. Zebah and Zalmunna were in Karkar, and their host with them, about 15,000 men, all that were left of all the host of the children of the east. For there fell, how many? 120,000 men. Isn't that something? So this was a great battle. And it wasn't just the 300. Others had pitched in and had fallen upon the Zebah and Zalmunna, their host, and all that stuff. And Gideon went by the way of them that dwelt in the tents on the east. In other words, these were nomads living a nomadic existence. They were not settled. They were living in a nomadic existence. And they thought that everything was going to be all right. They didn't know that Gideon was hot on their trail. So Gideon attacked by surprise and just slew them. And in verse 12, Zebah and Zalmunna fled, and he pursued after them, and he took the two kings of Midian, Zebah and Zalmunna, and discomfited. And my footnote says terrified. That's a pretty good translation. Terrified all the host. Well, now then, what are we going to do? Well, I remember, what did Succoth do? Succoth didn't do anything. So So we're going to deal with Succoth now. And I like the way Succoth was dealt with. Although, I wouldn't have liked to be dealt with that way. But they deserved it. They deserved it. So, Gideon returned from battle to the ascent of Heres. And since you're here in the area where there's a valley, an ascent, that's a place where you go up. So the ascent of Heres. And he called a young man of the men of Succoth and inquired of him. And he described for him the princes of Succoth. Now these were not a prince in the sense of royalty, but these were the leaders. That's what the word means. The leaders of Succoth and the elders thereof, 77 men. And he came unto the men of Succoth. And he said, Behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, concerning whom you did taunt me, saying, Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thy hand, that we should give bread unto thy men that are weary? And he took the elders of the city. What did he do here? He taught them. In verse 16, he took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men. He taught the men of Succoth. You reckon what he did? He whipped them with thorns. That must not have been fun. It doesn't say kill them, but he taught them. And then in verse 17, he broke down the tower of Penuel and slew the men of the city. So this was in punishment for their refusing to help. And they should have. They should have helped. It was their duty to help. All of these tribes, it should have been their duty to help. And there were numbers of the tribes that did pitch in. So this is their punishment now. So then he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, What manner of men were they whom ye slew at Tabor? Now again, that's in the general area there where we're looking at here. Tabor was a mountain up in that general area right up in there. So he said, Tabor, you know, I told you what Tabor looked like. It would just look like a conical mountain just rising up from the... Said, what kind of men were they that you killed there? What kind of men was it? And they said, As thou art, so were they. Each one resembled the children of a king. I seem to detect a little bit of flattery there. But anyway, Gideon said, They were my brethren, the sons of my mother. As the Lord lives, if you had saved them alive, I would not slay you. But now what? Now I am. So he told his firstborn, Jether, to get up and slay them. But the youth drew not his sword, for he feared, because he was yet a youth. And then Zeba and Zalmunna said unto him, Rise thou and fall upon us, for as the man, so is his strength. And Gideon arose and slew Zeba and Zalmunna, and took the crescents that were on their camels' necks, and appropriated them for himself. Then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, Rule thou over us, both thou and thy son and thy son's son. Now my other Mike. Look at what they were saying there, Mike. In verse 22, what were they saying to Gideon? So what were they in the process of setting up here? Yeah, that's right. They were going to set up a dynasty. And he refused. He would not do that. So They said, "Rule over us, you and your son and your son's son. You have saved us out of the hand of Midian." And Gideon said, "I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord will rule over you." Oh, that was good. That was good. I wish Gideon had continued to have that idea. So he said, "Neither will I rule over you. The Lord is going to rule over you. This is what I want to request of you, that each man..." And we have a different word here. Now, in the footnote here, you have the alternative of nose rings or earrings. So what do you have in your translation? Nose rings or earrings? All right, earrings. And, all right, that is the preference in the American Standard Version also, although in the footnote they say nose rings. So they had these earrings. They were, and notice the explanation why they had these earrings. What were they? Ishmaelites. Now, we learned that there were Midianites. We also have read there were Amalekites. Now we learned there were Ishmaelites. These were people that would, this is true as we read this, these were nomads. They were nomads. And we read of these people loosely allied with one another during the time. So they were Ishmaelites. And they said, "We'll willingly give them." And they spread a garment and cast therein the men all the earrings of his boy and the weight of the golden earrings. In verse 26, look at that. Someone have a figure there? The weight of the golden earrings. Anybody have a figure there? 43 pounds. All right. That's gold, right? Wow. So, the weight of the golden earrings he requested, besides the crescents and the pendants and the purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian, and besides the chains that were about their camels' necks. Wow. That's a lot of gold. A lot of value and everything like that. And then in verse 27, Mike, how about reading that? Verse 27 and through 28. Isn't that sad? Here the fellow's done so much good, and the last thing he does with his life is create a problem that Israel is going to have. So it became a snare to Gideon and to his house. And then the ephod. The basic thing of an ephod was I've done a good bit of studying on what an ephod was. And an ephod served different purposes. The most common form was a flap that was in the front and a flap that was in the back. And the priest would wear an ephod. And they would wear an ordinary ephod. Now the high priest would wear a special ephod. So... took slightly different forms. This seems to have been connected with a priest, some kind of a priestly service. This was an idolatrous thing. All right? That's what it was. It was an idolatrous thing. And it didn't take, in other words, how long would it take Israel to adapt to the idea of, hey, this is like a high priest thing. This is like a priestly thing. And then what would they do? They would adapt that as their thing. And now they're going to be priests. So somebody was going to be a priest. Somebody was going to play the part of priest. So that's what they did. So that's what it means when Israel fell away. They began to use that as a as a priestly ornament. That's what they did. So it was very sad, very sad. And the land had rest 40 years in the days of Gideon. And then in verses 29 through 32, Jeff, how about reading that? 29 through 32. So as I think about this, you know, I can't prove anything. I know what I would like, but I'm not sure that I can prove what I would like. I would like to be able to say that Gideon died a faithful man. I'm not sure that I can say that. I'm not sure because of what he set up for Israel. And he had, how many children did he have, Jeff? 70 sons. And then he had a son of a concubine. And this was at Shechem. And this son of the concubine was Abimelech. Now, Abimelech, the A-B-I, you would say Avi, and that would be my father. And the Melech is king. So what would Abimelech mean? My father is king. Isn't that something? Now, I could say it would make sense for him to say that of himself, and he may have adopted the name. But it seems to me that it's talking about Gideon. Names him, doesn't it? Is that right? Does it see? It seems to be. And that is so sad. Let me go once again. Yeah. All right. Look in verse 31. And his concubine, that was in Shechem, she also bare him a son, and what? He called his name Abimelech, Avimelech, my father is king. Isn't that something? So I can't, I wish that Gideon had been saved, maybe he was, I don't know. I have fears about that. I think you're right.
Might have good intentions like a lot of folks do.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Oh, I think you're right. And I think that's a good point. He started out by tearing down the altar of Baal and then goes back, if not embracing idolatry, he creates the occasion for idolatry to be practiced by the Israelites. So it's just a terrible thing. And as soon as Gideon was dead, the children of Israel turned again and played the harlot after what? The Balaam. The gods of Baal. And I've told people before, the word Baal is a word that means master. There were various words that are used in Hebrew for a master or something like that. In fact, a term for a husband was used, Baal. A term for the husband was Baal. And that would mean master. Isn't that something? And in the prophets even, the wife of a woman is named Baal, her Baal, her master. So it's interesting to me. And one time God says, Israel will not continue to use Baal. In other words, the name of a husband or something like that. They won't do that. Well, for a long time they did. And so, all right, let me go back here. All right. So I was going to tell you about Baal. You had a Baal, Baal, Berith, and Baal of that's Baal of the covenant. I don't know what covenant it was. It wasn't with Israel. Baal of the covenant. Baal Berith was the Baal of the covenant. And every place had its own Baal. Because they had the idea that, all right, there's a Baal over there and a Baal over there. Everywhere there was a worship, there was a Baal, a master over there, master over there. So there were many Baals. That's why you would have Balaam. Do you realize that Balaam is a plural word? It's a plural word. There were many Baals. So that's the idea. And so Israel began to worship and turned away from God. So soon, it's just so discouraging. So as soon as Gideon was dead, children of Israel turned again, played the harlot out to Balaam, and made, see that Baal Berith, or Berith, and that is Baal of the covenant. Baal of the covenant. Their God. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God who delivered them out of the hand of all their enemies on every side. Neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had shown unto Israel. So they were not kind to God, and they were not, Israelites were not kind to Gideon either. When we name the, many times when we name the judges, we'll talk about Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech. Abimelech was not a judge. He was a leader, but he was not a judge. Definitely not a judge. So I don't know why he was ever named a judge. He shouldn't have been named a judge. But he was a leader. And so you talk about a problem. Abimelech is a king of a problem. He really does. All right, so we'll take up with Abimelech's story in chapter 9. I like the story of Abimelech because of the way he was killed.